SAP is the agreement and the approach for the household that we do have an agreement, whether to debate or just the reports on those four agreements, you know them, which we adopted in the committee at that time. And we just remind one another, just to look into the approach, do we debate it, or we just adopt it in the chamber, given the fact that it will come late in the afternoon. So I would need your guidance, Mamo Dikhale, Dimakue, Lont, Manuel, Pandingan, so that we have a common understanding on the approach in the House, so that we don't have unnecessary things. I wish to welcome everybody after, surely, after a very exciting weekend, especially for the sports people. South Africa has been good over the weekend. Our national teams. Which motion, Mark? you're already married. You want to marry again? Should I? Okay. No, I'm just saying here in the committee. So, also, you know, things are happening in South Africa quite fast. Remember also, we had a kind of an omen, you know, the incident of Nigeria. Those remains were brought back, and we followed the proceedings around that. It's a very unfortunate situation, but we did pass our condolences to the families. I wish also to place that we do have a member who's not here, who's has got a standing apology. Mrs. Honorable Member Zondi would know that she has been hospitalized and she's not yet with us. We wish her also a speedy recovery. We must write to her and we wish her a speedy recovery on behalf of this committee. Please bring my brother's letter to her so that she knows we are with her to recover speedily. We know that Honorable Member Timunye is not present today. He did attend an apology. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. The first item is about the briefing on annual reports 2013-14 by the Department of Labor. Labor, Mr. Bean. We want to hear the unemployment. How are they going to tackle it in South Africa? If you take it province by province, the stats are very high of unemployment. We've got the triple challenge in that. We would want to hear that report. How did you address the matters going forward? We know that you did submit your report last week already, the annual report to us so that members can go through it. So we'll listen to you attentively. We would like to be out in, from this meeting from the Department of Labor at least by 12, because we are having other issues that we want to discuss with our honorable members. Now, members, we should listen very attentively. They will make their presentation 30, 40 minutes, or at least the maximum 45 minutes. 45 minutes, because it's an annual report. And then thereafter, we'll allow some questions by members. Think them through so that you don't have an afterthought questions when we ask these questions for clarity and so on from the department. They know they are speaking to the committee, which is an extension of parliament. Truth will prevail at all material times in their responses and their presentation. I will take that the leader of the delegation through DG, surely he will introduce his delegation. And this is, from us, you see the same faces. We don't change. You don't change the same faces, honorable members. Front here, from Honorable Faba to Doc down there. Welcome, Doc. Salam Salaikum. He's on time today, eh? Please don't start with that. That's your friend. I didn't hear that. Yeah, always on time. I see that Honorable Mokwena has not yet arrived. Please. He did not send you to do that. I would hope that he will arrive at an opportune time. Honorable Tebe, from you, I know it's Blue Monday, though it's Tuesday today.
Yeah, it's almost right.
Okay, thank you very much. Let I give over to the leader of the delegation. I did not listen to the apologies of the ministries. I don't know, because you will give us all the information flowing from your department. I leave that deliberately so that it is in your good hands. Otherwise, you are all welcome, ladies and gentlemen, also at the back. Can see some familiar faces and new faces. Committees are open to the public. You are allowed to come and listen. You can't participate. Even if you've got hallucinations, you must suppress that. Because it's our committee meeting. The only people who can speak is from honorable members, Van Lingen. She can talk. You know, ask questions. You can't talk.
Wait, is she the meeting making or not?
No, please. Okay. So you are welcome, but there is also tea outside. I can see some members have already helped them. You can enjoy yourself with the snacks and everything else outside, free of charge. Thank you. Over to you, DJ.
Good morning. Good morning, honorable chairperson and honorable members. If I can start off by extending the minister's apology, who is currently out of the country with Mr. Mkalik and Mr. Lamadi. But we do have representatives acting, DDG, Ms. Ntswaki, Mama Shere is here on the Labour Policy and Industrial Relations, and Mr. Vigil Sisulu at the back for inspection and enforcement with Mr. Thibault Suzanne. I also have with me the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Deki Maduna, Public Employment Services, Ms. Esther Tuane, the Chief of Operations, Ms. Egi Mwila, who's going to do the presentation. And we also, as part of the ongoing process of familiarizing our offices in the Department of Labor, honorable members may know, or may, if you are not aware of this, is that we have three big offices in Pretoria, nine provincial offices, and 126 labor centers, and an extended footprint in terms of centers that we operate from, about 76 Tucson centers and other centers that we visit once a week, including traditional authority areas to provide services. So we also brought people who are responsible for those services. We normally rotate them, honorable chairperson. We have Mr. Karim Adams and Mr. Lubelwane, who are in charge of our regional offices. And in future, when you see different faces, it's because we want them to also understand the implications of their work. And when you visit our offices, these are the equivalent of mayors or provincial representatives that you are going to meet in our offices. The work of the department is quite broad. From the budget we receive, there's work that we do in the department through those offices, but we also transfer money to other entities like CCMA, NEDLAC, Productivity South Africa, Sheltered Employment Factories. Now, for the purpose of today's presentation, and in line with the arrangement with Treasury and the AG, we will only cover the departmental component as per the request, but our entities are always available and they've tabled separate annual reports to that effect, which we can organize and coordinate because we achieve all our objectives through those extended offices. Now, we can move to the next slide. In terms of the, and also let me table the apology of the Deputy Minister who is currently in the mining summit in Pretoria. In terms of, did I omit anyone? I think Mr. Nyakemba is familiar face. In terms of the presentation, we will just give you an overview of the programs. I must say, Honorable Chairperson and members, that there must be some level of understanding that the programs do have an extended link with the entities because they are responsible for the transfer of funds, but also ensuring that those entities perform the extended work in line with the mandate. The report will broadly cover the 13-14 annual performance, achievement challenges, and the interventions that we are making. Largely those will be in the current financial year, that is 14-15. Program one is administration. This is basically ministry, DG's office, and all our corporate services. The report in terms of capacity, staffing, etc. is included in the report, and we thought that we should focus mainly on the core rather than on the administrative, and as such in the presentation we have omitted our achievements in those areas. We will present on the inspection and enforcement, public employment services, and labor policy and industrial relations, if you can move on. And briefly, what inspection covers or is all about is that it has to do with the question of maintenance of standards in the workplace, and they also assist the government of our country in realizing decent work by regulating non-employment and employment conditions through enforcement and ensuring compliance. Public employment services, on the other hand, is there to assist companies and workers to adjust to our continuously changing labor market and also in terms of regulating private employment agencies. And thirdly, the labor policy and industrial relations, which is basically there to ensure equitable and sound labor relations environment promotion in the workplace. So what Ms. Muilwa is now going to do is to take you through the program achievement. I must also say, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we have received an unqualified report on our finances. The report is presented in detail. However, we'll run through a number of slides, and we will also make those copies. Initially, we thought that, and I think it was partly the flow of information between us and the Secretariat. But we will also give you just a brief overview on the finance. However, that is included in the report, and like I said, we received an unqualified report. We are working towards a clean audit in terms of our finances. Over to Ms.
Thank you, Acting DG, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'll take you through the rest of the report. In terms of Program 2, which is Inspection Enforcement Services, the slide there is talking to private as well as public employers that were reviewed in terms of employment equity. We set ourselves a target of 435 for public, and actually in total it's 435, 158 for public and 277 for private companies. We are able to achieve, as you can see in terms of the breakdown, what we were able to achieve against an expected target of 314. And the challenges that we had in this regard is that there were additional companies on the original target due to, we've shifted from just procedural enforcement of our law to substantive. And in that regard, we picked up an addition. And we look at vulnerable, protection of vulnerable workers. We had set ourselves to do just under 130,000 inspections. We were able to achieve 90,000. And then we had a compliance rate of 75%. And I just want to point out to members that we also react in terms of inspections that are triggered by complaints that come in, and also some that we would go out and initiate ourselves. So it's a mixed bunch of those. And you can see the provincial breakdown in terms of the activities and the compliance levels. The next slide is talking to problematic sectors. Inherently, these type of sectors are the ones that most of the time we pick up the highest complaints in those particular sectors. And then we tend to focus on those so that we deal with it. In total, and what we're talking is the outcome of the inspection that we conducted. We're able to issue out 25,759 notices against a set target of 31,733. And you can see the detail. Just in the interest of time, I will try and summarize so that we have ample time to also interact with honorable members. Slide 10 is talking to vulnerable workers. In this instance, the focus is on the walkthroughs and how our help desk officials, that we call client service officials, are able to tackle complaints. We have set ourselves a target of at least having 75% of those complaints resolved within 14 days. We're able to achieve 66%. And the challenge that we faced was the lack of relevant capacity as far as CSOs are concerned. And we to mitigate against that, client service officers, CSOs, to mitigate against that, we do have a training program that focuses on client services officers. And I also need to point out that a failure to reach the 75% doesn't necessarily mean that the complaints go unaddressed. What it means is that they go to the next layer, they get referred to inspectors. And then the next slide, 11, strengthening of social protection. This is focusing mostly on the unemployment insurance as well as the compensation fund component of the work. And in terms of that, we are targeted ourselves to go out and inspect 9,700 companies, and then we're able to achieve 35,174. And we noticed that the target that we set ourselves was quite high, particularly in relation to the skills available to conduct those. And because this report is retrospective, going forward, we've since amended some of our targets to be in line with the resources and capabilities that we have at hand. And then what slide 12 says to summarize what I've already said, but I would like just to draw attention to bullet point, the second bullet point from the bottom. That says 97% of cases referred to Labour Court were ruled in favour of the department. And the 3% that was not ruled in favour, it was due to a defect on compliance orders or not observing the separation of duties as per the delegations. But in terms of the overall achievement in this area, it was quite high. And then the next program that you're looking at is program 3, Public Employment Services. In terms of slide 14, the president has assented to law, to the ES bill into law in March 2014. And we've since made strides in terms of making sure that regulations are in place for us to be able to move to a point where we are able to promulgate. And the challenge that we're facing at this point in time is that although the draft regulations have been put in place already, well, the Act has not been promulgated as such, and we are in the process of establishing the ES board. And the process is quite advanced at this stage, honourable members. And also just to talk to the issue of campaigns that we go out to conduct. We do major campaigns as well as local ones. And these campaigns, by nature, they're aimed at marketing the services of public employment services to both employers and work seekers, and also making sure that we're able to attract as much as possible potential work providers. So at a local level, we're able to do 801 of those, and major ones, which will be national campaigns, we're able to do 58 for the year. Then in terms of work seekers that we've registered on our employment services system, we have set ourselves a target of 500,000, broken down in terms of provinces, as you can observe there. And we're able to register over 600,000. So it is obvious that the demand for the service is quite high. And the next slide is talking to, of those people that we're able to register, we're able to provide counseling to 41% of the 500 that we had initially set ourselves. The nature of counseling that we provide is a combination of life skills at one level, and at another level it's also to prepare potential work seekers for opportunities that they will be invited for. Like for instance, if employers would invite them for interviews, then we try and assist in that regard. And we're saying, honourable members, that the challenges that we're facing is that the reality is that we are understaffed. Ideally, we should be having employment counsellors in each and every labour centre. We've got 126 labour centres countrywide, and we only have 96 career counsellors at this point in time. And we also have insufficient finances. And I'm sure the report, the financial report is going to draw your attention to some of those realities. And we had made some attempts to request additional funding so that you can be able to beef up capacity in those labor centers that are still lacking. And unfortunately, we were not successful. And the implications thereof, therefore, are that we're likely to continue to underperform in this area for that reason. And slide 17, speaking to the fact that we had had a total of 15,570 work seekers that were placed in registered employment opportunities against a target of 19,000. 19,000 is a very, very modest target compared to the number of work seekers that we tend to attract. And a part of the problem is that when we set this target, we really had to come to terms with the reality. And the reality is that there are no jobs. And that's one thing. And the other thing is that the people that are in our work seekers database, the average profile of an average work seekers, their skills levels are very, very low. And in some instances, people that will require, that will come through our doors, employers that will come through our doors, will be looking for particular skills that we may not necessarily have. So it's a combination of those factors. And you can see the details breakdown. In terms of work seekers that were referred to registered employment opportunities, because what we do, when we register employment opportunities, like for instance, if we have 20 employment opportunities, we prepare a number of people for those jobs, and we refer a number of people to those jobs. And we're able, therefore, to refer 98,000, which was surpassed our target of 76,000. employees, work seekers, were referred to other services. And in this regard, when we talk other services, we're talking unemployment insurance being one, and to some degree also our labor activation program that does some training, and those that would qualify for compensation would refer them to those, and those that qualify to be referred to employment opportunities would refer them to those. So it's a breakdown and a combination of things. Amongst our offerings, we also try and attract employers so that they come in and register vacancies as and when they become available. We had set ourselves a target of 1,000, at least having 1,000 employers coming through, and we're able to achieve 2,427 countrywide. Amongst our work is also to regulate private employment agencies. We had set ourselves a target of registering 500. We're able to register 309. And this target, by and large, is really not in the control of the department, because we tend to, like if an employment agency comes through to register, we register them. And the next slide, slide 22, is talking about the migrant work permits that we're able to, that we received and were able to process. We received 193. We're able to process 86% within 30 days, and the remainder we finalized within 60 days. And the reason why we are unable to finalize everything on time is that, by and large, you find that some of the applications are incomplete, and therefore it will be difficult for us to finalize those. The next three issues are really talking to what the program, public employment services, the transfers that it has, and the memoranda of understanding, of agreement rather, with entities within the department. So as you can see, there are a number of MOAs there, and amounts that were transferred. The first amount there of almost seven million talks to Productivity South Africa. That is the amount of money that was transferred to the entity. And the next one talks to Sheltered Employment Factories, that amount of money that was transferred. And the last column is talking to the to COIDA for compensation of injuries and diseases for government employees. So that money is housed within public employment services. So that slide really is talking about those transactions, and those transactions are also governed by MOAs.
Sorry, can I just ask for that last one to be repeated? The word COIDA was used.
Compensation.
COIDA refers to compensation for occupational injuries and diseases. This mainly has to do with the public servants injured or who get booked off from employment as a result of occupational related diseases. Because government does not contribute directly to the compensation, they give the department an allocation to make payments against the expenses that the compensation fund will normally have incurred on behalf of public service.
Are you happy?
Maybe, thank you, Chair.
Okay, it's not CAIDA, it's quite understand that. Sure.
So thanks for that, Acting TG. And then we're now on program 4, Labour Policy and Industrial Relations, slide number 24. The main achievements, and if you'll recall, this program is mostly about that's where our legislative framework and issues get really done. In terms of the first main achievement, the Employment Equity Amendment Act of 2013 was assented to into law on the 14th of January. And the delays were caused by the signing off of the EE Amendment Act into law, which delayed a little bit. But that has since been finalized. Also, the amendments around employment equity regulations were published for the public on February the 28th, and they were tabled at NEDLAC for deliberations by social partners in various chambers. The delays were also caused by the public comments because these are normally precede the process of activating the law. And also, as a way forward, we said that active participation by the department in NEDLAC deliberations to finalize NEDLAC reports and publish regulations in quarter 2 of 2015. And then the annual employment equity reports were developed by March 2014. And then the EE systems, we had challenges in relation to the statistical report required for data analysis for the annual report. And our IT is looking into that. And then we had 30 income differentials assessed to determine race and gender disparities in salaries. And since we met the target there, there were no challenges. As far as they have those...
Just a little bit on that one. Can you just explain it a little bit so that people can understand the flow? That.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The 30 income differentials refer to the assessment of 30 companies' salary benefits and packages to check if there is equal pay for work of equal value. There are no elements of unfair discrimination when salaries are being paid to women and men and other people with disabilities and so forth. So we are trying to eliminate unfairness in salaries.
I'm raising it deliberately so that you understand you are addressing the issue.
Yes.
Because we're going towards the 16 days of activism. And that matter will
be yes, Honourable Chairperson, we are addressing the issues of parity in salaries. Thank you.
Slide number 25. The hospitality sectoral determination was reviewed and published, and so was the taxi sectoral determination. And then new sectoral determinations are being investigated. In particular, here we're talking funeral undertaking sector. And then one child labor program of action was implemented in line with our 5-year program. In terms of our international relations, we've reviewed signed MOUs, Memoranda of Understanding, with Lesotho, China, and Namibia. And the reviewer thereof was finalized. What is still outstanding is Algeria. And as a proposed intervention, say, raising the issue with Algeria through diplomatic channels. And we continue to participate meaningfully in SADC, in AUL, SAC,
African Union Labour and Labour African Union African Union Labour and Social Affairs Committee of Ministers.
We also participated in the G20 processes. Also in ARLAC, we participated in ILO, and as most of our conventions are from there. And we also participated in the 102nd ILO conference. In terms of collective bargaining, the labor relations amendments were passed by the National Assembly, and 17 collective agreements were extended within 60 days. This affected 1,000, just over a million employees. And the challenges that you had was the legal challenges to extend the collective agreements. And as a corrective measure, we say support for centralized collective bargaining, as envisaged in the LRA. We also processed 146 applications for requests of registration by labor organizations. The challenge was ensuring that all those applications are processed within 90 days, and we continue to monitor the process in that regard. In terms of our labor market information system, we published 4 annual reports, the industrial action, annual labor market bulletin, the annual administrative statistics and job opportunity, and the unemployment in the South African labor market. Those are the 4 reports that we produced. We also did field work in terms of our client satisfaction survey. On an annual basis, we conduct this type of surveys to determine the level of satisfaction as far as our service is concerned. 2 briefing reports were also submitted to the minister on the labor force survey and unemployment insurance data analysis. And there are also, there's also research work that is currently going on, and the research work is at different levels of advancement. For example, the effectiveness of bargaining council's exemption process, the reduction of working hours to a 40-hour week. Those are some of the research work that we are doing. And as you know, research is invaluable as far as assisting us with feedback on how we're doing as far as our laws are concerned. And then the last slide, I'm just going to ask the acting TG to talk on it. Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Minister.
We'll ask the acting DG to talk on the last line. Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
Did she just say thank you, Chairperson, and the Honorable Members? How we are?
Who's that other member of the government?
Yes, thank you. you, Honorable Chairperson and members. The last slide talks to the performance, but we did say that we will also briefly just give a summary of the financial performance that is going to be done by the CFO. On the ICT, honorable members, this is one of those matters that made a lot of headlines, as you may be aware. However, we have done quite a lot of work to try and turn this area around, because it forms the core of our work, and without the necessary ICT support, it actually impacted quite seriously on our work. Honourable members may be aware, or those who may not know, is that we have had a situation where we had a 10-year contract with Siemens, which was subsequently extended by a year. And in the process of that contract, the main contractor, Siemens, ceded or transferred their rights to a new subsidiary called EOH, and Siemens left the country, and they left EOH to complete the remaining year. Now, one of the things that we had to deal with at the end of this contract was the future of the staff at the end of the contract. Now, those who are familiar with Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act is that the staff that are core and that were identified in terms of the contract to be performing work on this contract had to be absorbed in the department. A process that was very difficult, but eventually we have done that, and we managed to absorb out of the 120 that is a total of 97 staff members that were directly responsible for this contract. We also brought in CETA to assist us in the procurement process of a new company, because in terms of the State Information Technology Act, government departments are obliged to work through this agency to procure ICT services. We managed to advertise, and as we speak, we have a new company that is supporting us for the next 3 years, only on those residual aspects that the staff that were inherited from EOH cannot do. And CETA assisted us in that area, and they will be with us for the next 3 years. However, we also managed to establish a proper governance structure, and we also managed to finalize agreements with the SAP in terms of the license, but also to assist us basically in ensuring that the health system of the applications that we receive from EOH is in good order, and that we will be able to use them in going into the future. Now, there were some few challenges around the structure, the grievances that relate to some of the staff members against EOH, and the question was, how do you then resolve them? Now that they are no longer EOH staff members, they are departmental staff, and so on. But those were some of the domestic matters that we agreed with EOH. I must also say upfront that one of the things that made a lot of headlines was whether EOH managed to deliver adequately on the contract as allocated, and whether the department derived value for its money, something that we were very, very much engaged with this company. And this is one of the things that led the president towards publishing a proclamation. information which was announced here in Parliament and the Government Gazette for the SIU to also investigate certain aspects of that contract. And also we engaged SEP to do health check, and where we discovered with the assistance of expertise of CETA and SEP, we managed to come up with a list of a whole range of deliverables that EOH, even though the contract has long extended, is, as we speak, being forced to fix all those things without extra payment from the department, because we made sure that National Treasury, the State Law Advisor, CETA, the SIU also were part of that process to make sure that what EOH said and Siemens were going to deliver to the department is delivered and it is the kind of systems that we'll be able to use going into the future, given the amount of money we've paid. And we have also, like I said, finalized the structure, and there was a position of CIO that is in its last stages of being filled, post the necessary security clearances. I'm going to ask Mr. Maduna just to quickly give you a summary of how we performed on in terms of our finances.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair, honorable members. Just a quick summary on our finances, and also end with a slide on the Auditor General's report, which is also included as part of our annual report. In terms of the allocation per main division of the vote, administration, the programs of the department being the administration, inspection and enforcement services, public employment services, labor policy and industrial relations. The total allocation, of which is the final appropriation for 2013 for a financial year, was 2.445 billion, of which we spent 2.371 billion, and the variance was 73.8 million. In terms of the next slide, I think just a graphical representation of the spending, and the red part being the being the variance or the amount that was not spent, which I will explain in the next slide. The same information presented in terms of the economic classification, compensation of employees, the variance was 10 million, which we could not spend. The goods and services, the variance was 62.7, which mainly refers to the payments that we have earmarked to pay for our buildings or offices throughout the country that is administered by Public Works. But because of some few challenges with the leases that we could not get, some of the money we did not pay over to Public Works, subject to them giving us valid leases. That's the major part which contributed to the underspending of the department. The balance of 10 million was the one that was on compensation of employees. In terms of the next slide, I think, the next one also I think follows the same pattern in terms of the graphical representation. But the one that I also want to highlight is the transfers that we also make as a department to the organizations that we have listed, that are, I think, the DG that alluded on in terms of being linked to branches. We thought we'll just probably highlight as to the transfers that the department is making. Then the last slide is the summary of the...
You are summarizing too much. CFO, I want you to take us a little bit basics on the issue of municipalities, you know, the 207 and work centers for the blind, 2.6, what does that mean?
In terms of the first one, municipalities, these are the amounts that we pay for the services in our offices, the amount that we pay to the municipalities for the water and lights on our offices that we occupy throughout the country. In terms of the transfers that we make, International Labour Organization is our affiliation to ILO. I think in the presentation by Program 4, where they mentioned ARLAC, that's our amount that we also pay there for our affiliation as well, which is African Regional Labour Administrative Offices. I think that's the ARLAC part. South African National Council for the Blind, we subsidize
the Department of Labor subsidizes the salaries of the placement officers who are placing people with disabilities in employment. So there are various organizations, the ones that are listed here, there's the subsidy that is given to them to place disabled persons.
Do you want to do much? Do you? Do you?
Yes, that was the, yeah, that was the variance. Yes. All those associations that are mentioned down there.
The 204 million.
Maybe let me assist. The budget for the South African National Council for the Blind was 318,000, and 304 could not be allocated. And normally, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that we have moved from a process, and this is something that we do with all entities associated with us. If they said they are going to employ, for instance, 140 people that are going to do the placement of people, for instance, for deaf, blind, and so on, and we do the verification process, and we find that instead of 140, they only have 10 people, there's no justification to give them all the amount, because the information that they provide to us is subject to auditing process. And because of the shortfall, the agreements, as per the agreements that I signed with them as the accounting officer, we only pay them, transfer the money that is equivalent to the people that were in their employ, and hence not all the money was transferred, because ideally what would have happened is that if you transfer money and they employed only, for instance, 5 instead of 140, then they are supposed to return the rest. However, some of these organizations will use that cash for other purposes, and that is why there was a shortfall in the 304. That is, the 304 was not spent. The 74,000 was also not spent, and the 2.6 million on the work centers for the blind.
Continue. Maybe we'll come back. That's finished. We'll come back.
The last slide is the summary of the audit report, as put in our audit and in our annual report. As the accounting officer has indicated, we had an unqualified report, audit report, with One, the emphasis of MATA on the underspending of 3% on our budget, which I've explained in the previous slides. Also, the other issues that were raised by the Auditor General was were on our predetermined objectives, one being the material misstatements in the annual performance report submitted for auditing, the other one, material finding raised on the usefulness and reliability of the reported performance information. Additional matters that were also cited by the AG was one, the bid that was advertised for a shorter period, which I think AG was not happy with. And the second one, being that we did not ensure preferential procurement policy was implemented within the preferential procurement policy framework. The last one was the irregular expenditure that we had on our report that the AG highlighted, as we did know the accounting officer did not effective step to prevent irregular expenditure as per PFMA. Those were the emphasis of matter and additional matters that were raised in our report, in our audit report. I think, Chair, that completes the summary of the financials on the financials and the audit report.
The last sentence under that heading, expenditure management, the AG says it did not take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure as PFMA stipulates. It's a very interesting statement by because it should be qualified by consequences thereof. The consequences, well, somebody's in the driving seat. But we'll come back to that. I listen very carefully when you talk figures. We can engage on that page that you referred to back. But maybe it's some time. ladies and gentlemen, there is a report by the department. We are still on time. I'll give members time to ask questions based on what has been presented. I see some hands. Be brief to the point so that they can respond also accurately. I see the Honourable Member Makua as the first hand, followed by Honourable Member Meh, who will follow. And then Honourable Lont, Honourable Van Lingen, Honourable Faber, Honourable Tebe, and the last one will be Honourable Doc, will be the last one. Each member present your case. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Allow me to first thank the colleagues for the presentation that they have made, and we note with understanding that the Minister or Deputy Minister cannot be here, but you have done well in terms of the presentation. In terms of the actions of the department, Chair. My first one would be on page 3 related to enforcement and inspection. My party and I are concerned about the casualization of labor. And we know who the companies are. I won't mention them here. But would like to know what is the department doing to deal with this unacceptable habit that particularly our young people are being employed for endless periods on a part-time basis, and they are denied their benefits that every worker should be entitled to in terms of the LRA. My second point would be, is there anything that can be done about international businesses and international organizations not employing a relatively satisfactory number of South Africans in their businesses? We know, for example, that in Switzerland, they're using a quota system that you need to employ a certain number of Swiss citizens. Is there any move within the department to look at that? My third question, Chair, would be on the private employment agencies, and we've seen the very disturbing trend of some private employment agencies exploiting and charging desperate workers for the services that they offer. And the program that I saw on television was very disturbing because the department had not taken decisive action against the exploitation. We know that because of our levels of unemployment, people are desperate. And these are honest people that want a decent, eke out a decent living for themselves. And when they are exploited, it's just not acceptable. My final point, Chair, would be with regard to maternity leave. Can you just tell us what the present developments are? It is very disturbing that some of our professional women are only entitled to 1 month maternity leave. What is the present position? Is there any way in which you are looking at improving that, particularly for these women that are blessed with both the ability to give birth, but also blessed with the ability to contribute towards the economy and gets penalized when they have to give birth? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also echo what my colleague has just said by welcoming the presentation. And also to say we really welcome the apologies from the ministers. But my request will be that if ever maybe they are in the country, can they just prioritize our meetings? Like you said, the deputy minister is attending a workshop. In my mind, I was asking myself, Pretoria is not far. She could have came and attend our meeting and go back to Pretoria. So I'm just asking that next time, at least if it can be done in that way, it will do us good. And also to congratulate the department. The acting DG said they have received an unqualified audit report. So it's a good work, well done. But we are looking forward to a clean audit. If maybe some of the things that were not done well can be then taken care of, then the department is really doing us proud on that note. And the other one, I have a question on page 15. Under the contribute to employment creation, I was looking at Limpopo, it's not doing well, and also to check with the department if ever they can at least try and break this down so that we see who is employed where, like the youth and the people with disability and others, female, male, just like that. I hope Mama is understanding or getting what I'm saying. I'm trying to raise here. And then the other one is on page 30. On the ICT, under the challenges, there is an outstanding deliverable on the EOH. I just want to check if ever there is intervention that is going to happen on this one, because under the proposed interventions, they did not talk about it, but they talked about the finalization of ICT structure and the filling of ICT vacant position, but this one is silence. I'm happy about the inspection of the outcome with regard to the the problems that they normally refer them to court. I am happy that the department at least is making a follow-up, because in most cases you'll hear that people are complaining that no, they are saying they refer the matter to court and the dockets are lost. But with this department, it's not like that. But still, I'm not happy with this 3% inspection outcome. I was hoping that you will say at least 100% of the case referred to court were in favor of the department. But all in all, I am really satisfied about the way the department is conducting its work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. It seems to me it becomes a norm to have 4 questions per member. Over to you, Honourable Member Lott.
Thank you, Chair. Just some of the questions have been asked, just to add on to what the Honourable Makue said, it's not just maternity leave, but we in a country where more and more you get the same-sex relationships, and if there's 2 men that's in a relationship, you need to look at your paternity leave, because you also need to give the same support to a child, whether it's a husband and a wife, 2 husbands or 2 wives. So are you looking at that in accommodating the changing family structures that we have in the country? So that's added to the Honourable Makue. Then the CCMA, we sit with a lot of problems in this country with regards to strikes and the damage it causes to our economy. Now, it is a right to strike, and we need to make sure that we protect that right. But it's also important to make sure that we do not get to a situation where we damage our economy to such an extent that your job is so much more difficult as the Labour Department. And I want to find out if you are seriously looking into it to make sure that there's secret balloting before strikes take place, so that it's not just using influence by 1 or 2 strong individuals or groupings to push something through that's not necessarily the need or the want of all the workers in that industry. Then another thing is, okay, you've touched on the capacity in your IT department, but it's very important to make sure we get that thing, and I didn't see the timeline for the proposed interventions, but to make sure we get that in place, because nowadays we're moving into an age, if we have that systems in place, it will be a lot easier to do all the other work in your department. I'm allowed to do 3 only. Okay, I'll do the second round, Chief. Okay. Then, okay, that's in the IT industry. In general, your vacant post that there is at the moment, what's the, because this is a critically important department. Now, what is the department doing proactively to ensure that those important positions are filled? Trying to pull in expertise from outside government sectors, making it enticing for them to come and work for you to make sure that this department reaches its full potential. Charles, stick to those questions for now.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the first presentation on page 10, as I am representing my province of the Northern Cape, I am very worried about looking at percentage resolved, and I look at all the other provinces and they don't look good, but or some of them don't look good, some of them look very good, but then you look at the Northern Cape on 38%, and I would like to know why the Northern Cape is so low, if I can get an answer on that. That's the first question. Then on page 18, there's variances, and on the Northern Cape, the variance is minus 898. Now, if the department can perhaps just explain that to me, because I don't understand that that it's other way around. So that you see that on page 18, it's minus 898. I don't understand that mathematics. Perhaps you can explain that to me. Then, last question of mine would be, what is the department doing, people that lost jobs, on retraining them for the worker market? Because maybe I've missed it here, but I haven't really seen in this presentation any skills training for people getting re-employed into markets. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You've done well with your question. Honourable Chairperson, I think we spent a lot of time on figures that I can't say are irrelevant, but we need more detail on a lot of things. And I think that when we look at the financial figures that were presented last, we must go to slide 4 and we must ask the 62 million that DPW didn't deliver on. Which provinces did this take place and how come this happened?
Slide
4 of the financial, the last presentation. You know, goods and services? We were told that it involved leases that weren't completed or something. So does that mean the department sat in the street or didn't have offices, or which provinces were affected and for how much? Then when we look at slide 6, how come the municipalities were overpaid? For what? And I'm really not very happy with the explanation that our acting DG gave for the underpayment of the blind and the physically disabled and the work centres for the blind. Is there a downturn in disabilities, or is there what are the reasons for those associations or institutions for not coping or employing sufficient people? Are other departments cutting them down? Is the whole structure disintegrating? We really need to have reason behind that. I understand the fact that you said you can only pay for what they have people there for, but yes. And then it would be very interesting to see in which provinces the divisions or those facilities are not working properly. Then I'm a little bit confused about what is the difference between registered employment opportunities and registered opportunities and other services and the explanation thereof. I do think that all this registration of unemployed people, I want to ask you, to what extent are you creating opportunities, and to what extent you really bringing about the change to bring employment? Because our unemployment is growing and our youth employment is a serious problem. So are we making progress? We sort of danced all around the real issues in the department. And I would like to ask, which public employers were non-compliant, and whether the court cases had been concluded or what the outcomes are? And then when it came to, on page 67 of the annual report, the department rejected 19 of the 20 individual permit applications in the Western Cape.
on what basis were these rejected? In Gauteng, 12 applications were received and only one received a positive recommendation. The registration of unemployment agencies are also very low against targets. What is the reason for that? And then lastly, Chairperson, and I'm not going to linger too much on it, it's amazing that the figures that we're getting where we achieve targets are the policing figures.
Inverted comma policing,
where you check on this one and check on that one and we've over excelled. Are the targets set too low? And we're achieving those high percentages? And then we perform rather poorly on other scales, and I didn't take out that particular one. Oh, here it is, I think. With slide 13, protect vulnerable workers, where the target of 75% was set for the Eastern Cape, and only 46% of them were resolved. And lastly, really lastly, in conclusion, number 10, the funeral undertaking sector is a sector that really worries me in terms of the money taken from vulnerable people and communities, and I see that you have done a report. I would please ask for a report on that. If it's available on your website, you can just say so and I'll go and look for it. But that's something in terms of the reinsurance process that I would like to follow up on. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, honourable member. You said you are not going to linger. And I thought you were referring to your surname for linger. But really, you lingered in many questions, on many questions. Honourable member, Tebe.
Thanks, Chair. I will try to be shorter than Honourable Fanini.
Thank you very much.
You are shorter.
I'm Chair, sitting here and I'm DG. I think that the department could do more on the promotion of equity. The department must look really hard into how do we then can take the bar to higher levels. I really think that you can do more on that. The issue on the vulnerability of workers vis-a-vis the problematic sectors, I really think we can do more. I'm raising this issue because I think that though you were trying to give us a picture, but I'm sitting here and I'm getting a rosy picture, and I know that the realities at play are not as rosy as we get. If you want to go into Zoom and appreciate realities at play into your vulnerability of workers in sectors, whether you go to hospitality, whether you go to whatever sector, you would then realize that we should be at least sitting here and getting a sense as to are we making progress, are there any difficulties, so that jointly we appreciate difficulties and see how do we then move forward. The other responsibility, DG, bestowed upon you by the Constitution and all relevant legislative framework, is that key to your responsibilities to make sure that there's industrial peace, sound labor relation environment. Is the department aware that, particularly in your platinum belt, there are people who are sitting at home, can't access their employment because the role players, and in this case, labor organizations, are not playing according to the rules of promotion and the creation of industrial peace? And why is the department not raising such issues? And why is the department seemingly is like hamstrung out of the process? There's nothing that the department can do. the employers are saying we can't do this, it's union rivalry. But yes, yet we have laws in this country that give you the powers as the department to intervene as and when you are called upon. The other issue is that, look, we are talking about the creation of employment, but very key to the creation of the employment is sustainability of already who are those who are in employment. And I don't get a sense that we, if you want to go into the mess that we have find ourselves into in the platinum's belt, if you go into the agricultural sector, which is one of the key main drivers of our economy today, if you want to go, people are vulnerable. And we are talking here about shortage of inspectors, shortage of manpower to do the work. And I think we can do more. I'm just raising these things, DG, so that moving forward, let's appreciate realities on the ground and see how do we collectively deal with them. But I think that, for instance, you can walk into any other restaurant today and tell me that the reality is that just like the mining industry, which was built on the back of the migrant labor, you find the same patterns in the hospitality sector. And the department is not saying that. Walk in just here, take a walk. Walk into any restaurant. You will find that the majority of the people who are serving you there are not even South Africans, are not registered, are exploited, no benefits for them, Quetta is not including them, all these things. Thank you, Chair.
You know, I don't know what's your background, but the way you speak, you spoke like a person who was a shop steward at one stage.
I'm a layman.
Come from labor. I'm just looking across yourself. Thank you very much for those matters. I'm just looking across yourself. Mr. Nyekebe, your name was mentioned here in your absence. Now you are present. I acknowledge you. Welcome. Those are provoking statements that needs serious answers that Honorable Tebe is raising. Equity, vulnerability, you know, the environment that must be conducive to tone down the instability. The question of the hospitality industry. Are garages or service stations also part of the hospitality industry? They were also flooded in that level, on that score, with what Honorable Tebe has raised. You say, what's your name? In South Africa, we've got particular names, even if it's an English name. But now there are new names. Good luck. For the name Good Luck, you say, hey, who are you from? Where are you from? Good Luck. and so on. By the way, later I reserve my comments. I'll comment later. Doc, the last person, we are just on time.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, but the Honorable Entebbe speaks like a real fighter. So there isn't much left.
I can't be a fighter with a panda, but they must. At least one in the committee that speaks
like a fighter. Well, that leaves me with very little then. Thank you. Yeah, for me, the whole issue surrounding employment and job creation is fundamental to this is education, training, skills development, capacity building, that kind of issue. So the issues I'm raising is specifically within the Department of Labor itself, inspections at workplaces and so on. I noticed that there seems to be some restriction here, or there seems to be underachievement in this regard. What is this Department of Labor doing to build capacity within your own department to ensure then that inspections will be taking place? And that brings me also to the inspections regarding the occupational health and safety, because that is specific. It needs specific types of training. What is the department doing regarding the development of that capacity within the department? The issue of compensation of employees, I noticed that about 10 million rand, over 10 million rand was not paid out, although the department did very well in this regard. What was the reason for this? Where is the bottleneck or where is the difficulty? What is being done to address this? Very briefly about the, even the National Council for the blind did not utilize their funds, we, you know, maybe the Department of Labor should be engaging them. Again, there I can see that there's probably a lack of capacity, and they also would require some kind of training. The department should engage with them to see whether this can be brought about. And then this brings me to my, to where I'm really going, and that is at present, you know, we are having two universities being established in this country, and I'm fairly reliably informed that they're right now busy looking at the faculties that they should be having. And I can guarantee you guys, I can guarantee honourable members that you know, the easy way out here is going to be to go for the faculties that I would describe as being not job oriented. Because these are the soft options. It's easier just to have the university established and to have it running within 2 years. But in 5-7 years' time, you as a Department of Labor find that this, these universities, then lots of money spent in there, but they're not really doing much to support you in establishing and growing. So what is the Department of Labor doing to engage the Department of Higher Education to ensure that the faculties will have courses that are job-oriented courses? Thank you very much.
Okay. That's what?
That's what the Mpumalanga University is concentrating on.
Okay. Agriculture. Okay. thank you, honorable members.
Sorry, Chair, if I can just add, you know, I'm thinking specifically of science subjects. You know, not I know agriculture, yes, but we are looking at more than just agriculture. We need to look at information technology. We need to look at engineering, architecture, I should be protected here, Chair, because
I am protecting you saying that's enough. You've made your point. Otherwise. At least we have taken those points.
Well done, Doctor.
Please, you are protected, Honorable Farmer. Please don't start your fight without a flag. Round off, Doc.
Chair, we're looking at the growth in the health services and the national health plans that we are looking at going ahead, and I'm thinking specifically of the health services or the health professions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Doc. I think the matter of policy development and training is very critical if we are listening to members. And also the role the private sector must assist us in this issue on this matter of job creation. And the country can't be done by government alone, but you can make conditions conducive for employment, but that cannot be done by yourselves alone. I think we need to emphasize that. This issue of, because there are also other role players in the private sector and some departments, sister departments of yourself, your TTIs and so on, they must come to the party to assist. It's a huge task, this one of unemployment in the country. That's why three issues were lifted to say we are confronting ourselves this time around. Unemployment, and you name them, the other two, inequalities and so on. The job fund, to what extent is it coming to alleviate the challenges that we're having? You know, there was a job fund, or we should create it. The question of the UIF, it must support the unemployment, the employment of workers, of unemployed in the country. But you see also the department acting DG and your colleagues. We are coming from provinces here. The matter of breakdown on any development in the particular sector, you must understand, we'll always have keen interest from our provinces as we are seated here. That's why, honorable members, we should talk of Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng, and so on, because we are the National Council of Provinces. And we are, you know, we are unlike the NA. NA is generic. We are specific to an extent that even when we go to constituency work, when these members go to their constituencies, they will go to those areas where you pointed in your book and come back and contest you, either to compliment you or to assist you by giving you information to say what you raised here is not what is happening on the ground. Hence, they come very strong on these matters. So I'm saying we are more focused, especially on provinces, to an extent that you will also call your counterparts. I know it's a national competence, but where some projects reside in the various departments in the provinces, you call those departments to call them to account so that we understand whether they are following what you have prescribed as the country to follow. So I'm saying we need to be much more, we need some more meets. I know we do have this document, your annual reports, and the treasurer, your MTBPS document, which always guides us in your working. But without saying much, there's a lot that can be debated. Labor can take us the whole day. If you tease to protect vulnerable workers, who are those? And we must commend you. Your department is doing quite well in some areas, your domestic workers. The minister is looking onto that and is improving on it. We are following the trends. That's why we are not raising it. The question of farm workers, we are also okay with those trends, though there's always room for improvement. And other related matters, your seasonal workers. I know there is a challenge in some areas, be it citrus, be it fishing, and so on. So we do make some follow-ups, and we commend you where it is necessary. But nevertheless, let's give to the department to respond so that I will make the closing remarks on the matter. Thank you. There are about 20 questions all, but please, don't follow and throw some advices and comments. You can't respond as if you're making another presentation at DG. I know your UCC did not want to speak on the ICT because of the complexity, because I can listen to yourself as you're trying to very hard to explain the matter of the contract and the overseas company leaving and outsourcing that to another company. I said, all right, I've noted it. It's not that I don't have something to say, but in what you have been saying, there's a lot that one can source out of that, especially when you talk financial implications. It's not just the movement. Because funds follow function. That principle, I will not apply it now, but later, surely, I will make a follow-up on yourselves on that matter of the contractual agreements or arrangements. And how you arrive at a particular point where you take over those systems under your belt. There's a lot to say in finances. The overpayment, Mamu Fanling and raised that much. I heard it also in my question. Surely they are ready to shoot. Please shoot, not from the hip.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members. I have a team that I will also distribute a number of questions to, which are the PERS IES related questions. But I'll just run through a number and my colleagues will follow. The question around what are we doing to contribute towards youth unemployment, I think largely programs such as public employment services in terms of registration, placement of people, counseling, which is a major part of getting people to understand the labor market, is what we are doing. I think honorable members must also take note of the fact that pre-2009, this department was also responsible for skills development, because of acknowledging the gaps in our system, that a lot of people drop out of the schooling system, and later on they will need quite a lot of assistance to enter the labor market. And currently we are working with DHET to fill that gap, because this responsibility now lies with them, and we are doing our best to refer as many people that are not suitable in the labor market to assist, to receive further assistance in that area. In terms of ensuring that international organizations employ local people, I think this question is linked to a number of questions around our migration policies. We serve in the board that is the board established by the Minister of Home Affairs to, amongst others, regulate the question of migrants. Now, on one hand, you're sitting with two extreme difficulties. In terms of the protectionist approach, I think all of us and every country does that to protect citizens to be the first priority in terms of opportunities that arise. And that is in making sure that the migration laws are as strict as possible to benefit locals, and where you have skills gaps, you then allow other people. I'm sure those of you who have traveled to the U.S. and other places, you filled up to 17 pages of a visa, just even when you land, not let alone staying in that country. Now, we have we now have regulations that were passed partly to try and deal with it. And I must say there's a distinction between areas where we have scarce skills and areas where we have low skills and asylum seekers. And there's a big problem. As we sit here, the Department of Labor, the Department of Home Affairs, even Statistics South Africa, we are struggling. We can't tell you the total number of illegal or unregistered migrants that are in the country because there's no record. And we all doing our level best, and our inspectors are also doing their best, working in some cases. We conduct raids with Home Affairs, with the police, in various forms. But honourable members may also know that because we are also in some areas expected to make appointments, because some employers would insist that the rate of crime is high, and therefore we need to make appointments because they need to draw a distinction between criminals and proper law enforcement agencies. When you make appointments, the day you turn up, the illegal and unregistered migrants are hidden or they are forced to run away. So those are some of the realities and challenges that we continue to confront. Private employment agencies, it is true, and I think this is within the broader ambit of the labor broking, because the private employment agency and temporary employment agency loosely translate to labor broking to a certain extent, because on one hand you're dealing with organizations that employ, that facilitate employment of people either as an employer or to put them in a company on a temporary employment basis. Now, interventions that we have made, I think that the amendment to the Labor Relations Act, section, I think, 198 and some sections of 179, are partly aimed at addressing this problem. We believe that with the promulgation of the new law, we may not get the problem completely away, but we will put a serious dent to that problem, because the nine categories that have been outlined in the labor relations basically forces employers to, amongst others, for instance, on young people who are employed as casuals and all that. If you employ people beyond a certain period, you'll be forced to take them on a permanent basis, because that's how exploitation happens. People, currently as we speak, people talk about inflexible labor laws, but Honorable Chairperson, I can tell you that despite the research done by OECD and ILO, our laws are amongst the most flexible. That's why you still find people 30 years being casual workers, no pension fund, nothing. And they continue to be to be employed. But the Employment Services Act, working in combinations with the Labor Relations Act, once promulgated and the enforcement penalties that we have attached, we believe they will go a long way in addressing this problem. Also, we're working with the Department of Higher Education and Training. We know that part of the Jobs Fund introduced this element of subsidies, but some employers are basically using the subsidy to displace older workers. And when the subsidy is withdrawn, what we have noticed in other companies is that immediately those young people that were employed under the subsidy scheme are also retrenched because some of them are catching in on the subsidy. And this is something that we are engaging with trade unions and Treasury to say that we need to tighten the scheme, because when this department was responsible for skills development, we piloted the scheme and we were able to demonstrate that if you attach the subsidy to aspects such as learnership or apprenticeship, there you make much more better impact, because people are on contract and you are able to inspect that the training is done in line with the contract and so on. And I think in the review process we will introduce those elements, because our colleagues in Treasury have realized that unless we go that way, we are going to continue with the abuse. There was an issue, Honourable Member, raised around the outstanding deliverables on EOH, and I did say that we did a health check on all the systems that they've delivered to us, and despite the fact that the contract expired, EOH, as we speak, is fixing all those problems without any additional cent. And over and above that, I did indicate that the SIU is also investigating as to whether the prices that they charged us, we did get value for money around the systems that they provided to us. There was a question. The reason I'm skipping others is because my colleagues will come in. CCMA, and I think this question was raised in a number of areas around the labor market and what is it that the department is doing. Especially around strikes, industrial peace, sustainability in terms of employment and so on. I must say that this is at the core of the work that we are doing. CCMA, Presidential Working Group, the NEDLAC Labor Market Chamber, the process that the Deputy President was assigned to run with in terms of the Indaba, all the issues at Marikana, etc. All of them can be summarized around the intervention that I think the first honorable member in terms of the question raised, is that because of the level of poverty, the high rates of inequality, levels of unemployment, and the gap that is raising between the poor and the rich, that is why there's an issue around the need for a minimum wage. And at the same time, those that are in the ILO language, we're talking about the working poor. The more people work, the more poor they get, because the income they get is distributed accordingly. Hence the violent nature of the strike, because the income and the disposable income that people have has diminished because of the payments that they have to make to electricity and all that. Hence, the second element of trying to address the industrial strikes and industrial peace, because the president, in assigning this task to us, was to try and find a solution that can address both ends. And that is why we have had the endeavor, that is why we have agreed on a process, and we have given ourselves a period up to end of July to engage and come up with a solution. We believe that we won't come with a perfect solution that will address the minimum wage, as much as we won't come with a perfect solution that will address the violence nature of the strike. But the process agreed to is a win-win situation where we will go a long way in terms of the minimum wage, but at the same time we'll get concessions from the employer side in terms of the strikes, because already in the discussions that we are involved in at NEDLAC, we believe that if labor can give in on certain things, employers also will be able to give in on some of those things. And some of them featured in the amendment to the labor relations that we tabled last year. There was an issue around, I'll leave the finance-related questions to Mr. Maduna. Timelines around capacity, I think I did indicate that as we speak with dimension data, we already transferred the 97 staff. The only place where we are lacking is just the appointment of a chief information officer, and the process has already gone a long way. And with CITA's assistance, we believe that that problem will be history in the department.
I'm saying by the end of this financial year?
The end of this financial year.
The timelines is about time frames.
Yes.
Right.
Dimension that I did indicate is already on board. The staff have already been transferred. The EOH issue, we have given them until the 31st of March to finish all those outstanding applications. So we believe that on that one we are on track. The issue around promotion of equity. Maybe let me leave that to my colleague Ms. Mama Shelley to deal with that question.
Can I just say the time is against us,
okay.
And I can see you've got many pages that you've written. I know many questions have been raised,
yeah.
But just be more specific. You know?
Okay. We also engage in the Department of Higher Education as part of Interministerial Working Group and Outcomes 5 to make sure that the training institutions, however independent they may be, the question of skills plans and the people that go through the system, the throughputs, meet the requirements of industry and the labor market, and also the needs of the individual as well. The question of I think jobs fund, I did touch on that issue, and maybe let me allow the other colleagues to run with the maternity leave. Okay, on the maternity leave, honorable members may be aware that we are currently amending the unemployment insurance fund, and we will welcome input in that area, because there were a number of proposals that were made around extending benefits, and I think inputs in that area will be welcome. The difficulty, though, especially amongst professional women. I don't think this department is very clear in terms of its employment equity and the right of women in terms of birth and also accessing benefits. The issue, though, with professional women is that the UIF has got a cut-off point where people earning above a certain wage level do not contribute to UI, and that is applicable across everyone, including men and so on. So women, if they earn above the threshold, don't contribute to the UI and therefore are not entitled to benefit. The same applies to any man who earns above the threshold set. If you lose employment, you will not benefit because of the threshold. But those that are within the threshold, I think there were issues around self-employed women and so on. And the issues here is around contribution, because UI is based on 1% employer contribution and employee contribution. And in the absence of contribution, that's where there were difficulties. But we are dealing with those issues in the context of amending the UI to get even self-employed people to look at how they can contribute towards the UI, and whether that's possible or they would want the UI to cover them as well. And I'm sure paternity, the same will apply on. I think where adoption papers are available and all that, I think the UI Act is aligned to all other legislations, and there may be one or two incidences maybe that could have happened where our officers in the various offices could not assist, but that's and those areas where there are proper adoption papers, and depending on the age, I'm sure those could still be accommodated in the current law without any major amendments. It may just be a question of systems and getting our officials on board.
Yeah. So the matter of 1 month in terms of the maternity, the professor, it's about the contribution. Maternity leave. I think that was the question that was raised by the honourable member.
Okay. I think the benefits currently, we are increasing. We have got 4 months benefits. However, the UI is also based on credits. And in the proposed amendments, we are extending that period to up to 8 months, and beyond that, it will be based on certain conditions. That is, if people subject themselves to further training and so on, that is how they will continue to further receive funding. Maybe on this one, we may need information to understand the basic issue, because even for other people, depending, if for instance the credits that I have differs from what she has, my UIF entitlement is not automatic that I'll get 4 months, because it will have to be proportional to the credits that I have, and so on. So the 1 month and the 3 months, maybe when we get the specific information, we can then be able to deal with, because I think it may be difficult to just generalize. I think once we get the information, we can give an accurate answer. Employment equity.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson DG. On promotion of equity, I just want to mention that we, in order to fast track the implementation and enforcement of employment equity, we have shortened the enforcement mechanisms in the amendments to the Employment Equity Act to make sure that we compel employers to comply. The Amendment Act came into effect from the 1st of August 2014, including the regulations to make sure that we implement the amendments. Included in the Amendment Act that came into effect on the 1st of August, we have also given more powers to the CCMA to ensure that when cases of unfair discrimination are brought to the CCMA, the CCMA has powers to arbitrate and issue awards and make sure that those vulnerable workers that are unable to take their unfair discrimination cases to the labor court can get access to justice at the CCMA without spending any money because they don't have money. Hence, we don't see many cases of unfair discrimination being taken to the CCMA. And we also made sure that on cases of sexual harassment, irrespective of how much the person earns, and irrespective of whether you are a man or a female or in terms of same-sex harassment, sexual harassment at the workplace, you are able to go to the CCMA for arbitration and award will be given by the CCMA without you incurring any further legal costs. And we believe by doing that we are actually on the right track to promote equity in the labor market and give access to justice to the most vulnerable workers. At the same time, what we did in terms of closing the inequalities in salaries, in the same Amendment Act that came into effect on the 1st of August and the regulations, we made sure that we put specific provisions that prohibits unfair discrimination in benefits and packages that are paid to employees to prohibit inequalities in pay based on race, gender, sexual orientation, birth and religion and disability and so forth, to ensure that there is parity in salaries that are paid to workers. And we believe that by doing that, we are not only empowering all the workers that were previously disadvantaged, but we ensure that we economically make sure that there are no inequalities to address the issues of poverty in our society. So we believe, Honorable Chairperson, that there is a lot that we need to be done together with private sector to ensure that we address the imbalances of the past and promote equity. And on the last issue, DG, if you allow me, the report for funeral undertaking, it was requested. This report is still under consideration by the Employment Conditions Commission, but we can make it available because our intention is to publish the sexual determination for funeral undertaking by end of March 2015, so that can be made available. Thank you.
Right. Any outstanding finances or CC?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If I may just address some of the issues around this is Mr. Seafield. if I may just address some of the issues in relationship to the inspector that you raised. But let me preface my input in terms of the debate and the DG touch on this issue around the flexibility and rigidity of labour legislation. I think that's an important element that we do not overregulate in the labour market so that the labour market can function effectively. So there were a number of questions in relationship to the inspectorate. One was the issue of the capacity of the OHS inspectors. Yes, we agree totally. There's a number of specialized areas that we need to establish in relationship to occupational health and safety, and we've done that through what we call the specialization project in the department, where we try to establish the capacity to do occupational health and safety within the different provinces. So what we've done is to highlight certain areas and say that maybe for construction, maybe for chemical, maybe for mechanical, maybe for occupational health, we've established these capacities within the provinces so that we have on site. Obviously, there's a dearth of inspection in people with those kinds of capacities, but we're trying to develop that capacity. Let me just point to the following, that in terms of the ILO, idealistically, South Africa should have one inspector for every 10,000 economically active portion of the economic active population. That would translate into about 2,000 inspectors that we need to have in the country. We have now about 1,300 inspectors. So there's a long way to go to that point in terms of it. So there will always be a gap. But it's how you utilize the resources at your disposal to deal with the issues. That's the one thing. The second thing that you ask in relationship to the issue of the 3% problem in terms of, well,
You see, it is whether a case should go to the CCMA, whether it should go to the Labour Court or whatever. We've encouraged our inspectors to deal with all cases that of non-compliance that is referred to court. And unfortunately, these things would happen because it's about the interpretation of the legislation. And you will have it in any case, in whether you are as what we've done in order to address that shortfall is to establish a capacity within the department, which we call statutory services, to deal with those, kind of understanding the dynamics in the relationship. Where do you refer a case to? Why should a case be referred to? Etc. So we build that capacity in relationship to this. The second question was in relationship to the applicability of our labour legislation. We spoke about the migrant labourers that are afraid to. Well, the law is very clear that irrespective of your status, whether you are a regular or irregular immigrant, the law applies. The Constitution affords those rights in terms of the legislation, and therefore the immigrants or migrant workers are as protected as ordinary South Africans, if you will. So I thought that I just need to raise the issue. There's the issue of the 38% in the Northern Cape. Why 38% in the Northern Cape? Well, there may be a number of factors that contribute to those things. If you look at the size of the Northern Cape, the number of I traveled from Upington from Kimberley to Springbok. But you see, you got to travel there, do the work, and then travel back again in terms. So it takes you probably 3 days just to do that. But the reality is that there may be a number of issues that contribute to those issues. Where the client is, the nature of the case. The CEO was very clear that because that refers to complaint management, that a complaint doesn't die if it's not resolved within that specific period, 7 days. It may take a bit longer to resolve the complaint, but that is not recorded as an achievement if it takes longer. But if it is not resolved, it automatically escalates to an inspection. Yeah. So that's the issue. So there may be a number of issues that contributed. Are the targets set too low? Was the next question? Well, the CEO also indicated that these are proactive and reactive inspections. What we do is try and manage our resources around the proactive inspections. But if a client walks through the door and an inspection is required, you can't show that client away. You've got to do those inspections. Whether you have the resources or not, you just got to do that kind of work. And therefore, you see the kinds of issues that emerges in relationship to the number of inspections that has been conducted. The reality of the matter is you cannot show a client away. The next question that I want to deal with, Chair, and I'll be very quick in relationship to this, can we do more about employment equity, vulnerable workers, etc.? Given the reply from Michelle in relationship to what we've done in terms of employment equity, we've also tried to shift our focus and say that instead of focusing on JSE-listed companies, we now want to change our focus into substantive compliance so that we have a broader footprint in relationship to the enforcement of employment equity in the country. So the focus will shift from JSE-listed companies to substantive compliance across the country, so that our footprint just gets broader as we do work, so that we can do more. In relationship to problematic sectors fundamentally refers to the occupational health and safety inspections in the country. Again, as I've indicated, I do not want to lie to you, I think we have 138 OHS inspectors in the country. 138 qualified labour in OHS inspectors in the country, and therefore those targets that you see are in the regions where they are, because we've got to take into consideration resource limitations, we've got to take into consideration economic activity within the area in which those inspectors operate. Chair, I think I've addressed all of the OHS, sorry, the IAS issues.
And the non-payment.
Mr. Seafield. Thank you. CFO on financial matters.
Thanks, Chair. I think the first question was on slide 4 in terms of the 62 million underspending in respect of the leases from public works. I do not have the list of the offices that we had problems with. That can be supplied, Chair. The other issue was the overpayment.
When can you supply that information? Because that's very critical. Because the question was also in what are the, which provinces they reside and so on. So that
I think when we supply the municipality, we also indicate the province.
All right.
Yeah.
By when? Friday, because you just answered the document.
Friday it will be.
I'm not saying by Friday.
Okay, by Friday, Chair.
Yes.
The municipality's overspending is not an overspending, it's just that we under budgeted for the amount. The issue is this low information coming from the DPW in terms of our expense with in relation to the municipalities. So we just had to pay because I think the funds were available, so it indicates the overpayment. Just that we under budgeted because we didn't have the real figure in terms of how much we owe the municipalities. The last question is in respect of the 10 million on compensation of employees. The major part related, we are earmarking that amount to pay for the OSD for the career counselors. Unfortunately, we had to get the concurrence from DPSA, which couldn't come in time for the closure of the financial year, hence the amount was under, so it was not spent. I think those were the three questions from finance. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe just few ones. I think the question of the breakdown of information per province, we take it. We have that information. It's just that for the purposes of the slides and the annual report, Treasury just said, look, this is just too much. You'll make your report to be very bulky. However, if you have Northern Cape and you would want to know in terms of the breakdown in the various districts, we have that information and we can make that available. And the same in terms of the breakdown youth, women and people with disability, we also have that information and we can make that available. The question around the deaf organizations and those for the blind, yes, partly, even though we underpay them, we are taking them on board to educate them and show them how best to can comply with the Treasury requirements, and in fact going into the future, we are moving away from the 7 organizations that traditionally benefited to opening up the system to allow more organizations to benefit, because these organizations that we continue to fund benefited even before 1994. And that is why between ourselves and Treasury, there's an agreement that we need to open up the system so that the other organizations of people with disability can also benefit. And the last question from Honorable Doctor there is that some of our initiatives around employment, we didn't mention them in detail because largely they will be within the unemployment insurance fund. For instance, the money that we collect over 84 billion rand that is in reserve, we don't just put it in the bank. The R21's Mirubi project, Kusile, the Cape Town International Airport, most of the revamps that were done in those mega projects were done out of loans that were given through the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, to various agencies, and they are paying us a very low interest rate of about 6%. And that's how the department, apart from the perceptions that people see and say we're not contributing to employment, those major projects, we are a major player in also in terms of the compensation fund reserves. More than 34 billion rand has been invested in all those projects, infrastructure projects, that we are seeing. I think those were some of the omissions that I've seen. Okay, Ms. Brani said we skipped one.
Yes, there was a question as to regarding the applications that are rejected to bring in foreign labor. The applications are rejected on two reasons. Main one is if the employer does not comply with legislation, that employer is not going to be allowed to bring in foreign labor. And the second, if the skill is available in the country, the employer will not be allowed to bring in the foreign labor into the country. And the last one was the issue of the private employment agencies. Why is the number so low? The association has also found that the Association of Private Employment Agencies has also found that they also have a decline ever since the amendments of the labor relations. Now that each and every organization has to register with the Department of Labor, that's going to be monitoring. We're seeing all these people who are doing, were not doing proper job, maybe getting out of the system. That is why there is that decline in the number of registrations. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I think we need more time on this. In fact, each department needs more time, almost the whole day, when we do annual reports, because this is almost an executive summary of a real document. Though we do have it, we do read some of them, but we need the whole day, because this department is one of the strategic departments in government that must look well after our people, especially when you talk employment and so on, question of training, so that they match the skills that they have been trained into. They must match the vacancies that are there outside. There is also the question of the statement of comprehensive income, you know, the 44% of the sheltered employment factories, the revenue, the civil revenue that has been collected. We need to look into that. It's a very serious matter. So I'm saying we members must feel free to write to them to ask more questions. I know there are follow-up questions that would have raised gray areas. I know Honorable Member Makua, at some point when we were talking, responding on his questions, especially on maternity, he wanted to make a follow-up, but then he looked at his watch and said, okay, time is up. Please. Can we, just before members leave, thank you very much, Department, Acting DG, with your colleagues. We will make a follow-up question where it is necessary, but thank you very much for your transparency and honesty in responding to some of the questions that members have raised. I know it's not enough, but at least you're available. One critical matter that was raised by honorable members, the priority of this committee is very important. That relates to your principals. They should prioritize, especially when they are not out of the country. Because this program has been scheduled long time ago, this meeting, and we do communicate with your department. So it's not very nice not to have a political principal into these meetings. Otherwise, have a happy landing in Pretoria. Thank you very much for that. And if we don't see you, enjoy your festive season. Thank you. Can you be released so that we deal quickly with one or two issues here, so that also we go?
Chair,
go to Keras. Yeah?
Can you
allow
me for 2 minutes to speak with them outside?
I must speak with them or
no,
you?
For me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can.
Let them wait for the chair.
Yeah. The acting DJ will wait for you outside. Thank you very much. You are here for the list. Please. Yes, that's the best.